Her presentation today is Labor in the Pulpits on the Bima in the Minbar by Rebecca Meyer Rao. Rebecca, who uses she, her, hers pronouns, has been the executive director of Worker Justice Wisconsin since 2020. Prior to that, she taught in the Religious Studies Department at Edgewood Collison in Madison, Wisconsin for 10 years. Her leadership style, teaching, and life are all located at the intersectionality between spirituality and justice. Rebecca has a PhD in theology from Marquette University. So, welcome.
Thank you. It's so good to be here today. I really appreciate you having me here to talk about these important issues. Important issues that are facing workers today. And I already feel a little part of the community, having heard your joys and sorrows, and thank you for allowing me to share in that today. So I wrote something out for this. Ordinarily, my style is more informal. So if you want to interrupt me, you will not offend me. If you just have an immediate question to ask, I'm totally open to it. As you heard in my introduction, I taught for 10 years, and so I'm used to interactive formats. So, good, we have our slideshow, and I'm just gonna, good, okay. So again, hello and welcome, hello and happy Labor Day. My name is Rebecca Meyer Rao, and as you know, I'm the Executive Director of Worker Justice with Wisconsin, which is a local interfaith nonprofit that advances justice in our community by building collective worker power together with faith and labor allies. We partner primarily with low-wage and immigrant workers because they are among the most exploited in our community. And we empower individuals to fight workplace injustice through education, community building, and collective actions. I should mention that we also, when we partner with unions, we will support union actions. And we worked closely with SEIU this past year when the Meritor Nurses organized. They had a successful bargaining with the union, as well as Oakwood Village and other things. So, in addition to helping our own workers who are non-unionized immigrant workers primarily, we also work with unions when they're organizing. The centerpiece of Worker Justice Wisconsin is our Worker Center, where non-unionized workers come when they face things like wage theft and discrimination at work. To give you a sense of what we do at the center, last year we opened 210 new cases. That was nearly double the year before because of COVID. The things that workers faced was quite difficult, as you might imagine. So as you can see here, 44% of these cases dealt with wage theft, 19% dealt with COVID-19 exclusively. I say exclusively because most cases had something to do with COVID. Many of them did anyway. 18% were dealt with discrimination, 9% with health and safety, and 8% with workers' compensation injury. In 2020, we assisted workers in recovering a total of $141,040 in legally owed but unpaid wages. Of those who opened cases with us last year, 90% were people of color, 88% were Latinx, 85% were immigrants, and most worked minimum wage jobs. As per usual, the vast majority of these workers resided in Dane County. I'm happy to celebrate worker justice with you today and throughout the month of September, as you participate in our Labor in the Pulpits on the Bima in the Minbar program this year. This year, we lift up the dignity of work as the COVID-19 pandemic exposes deep socioeconomic divisions that run along racial, ethnic, and gender lines. I am especially mindful of Black and Latinx workers who have experienced the highest unemployment rates and the greatest level of COVID exposure during this time. I am immensely humbled by healthcare workers, along with many support and service staff in hospitals and clinics, who have done everything they can to keep us as healthy as possible. And I am ever mindful of the thousands of immigrant workers who, despite sacrificing their physical and mental well-being to work in unsafe conditions, despite being considered essential workers, and despite faithfully paying their taxes for years, have received absolutely no unemployment benefits or stimulus monies during the entirety of the pandemic. I have here a few pictures. I'll use my clicker here. This is Kristen Taylor. She is our worker center manager. And here you have Socorro Cortez. She is one of our worker center staff as well. And these pictures are just with our staff, with people who had their wages stolen. And this is the moment they received that check that was theirs, but finally, they finally receive it. Unfortunately, we see a lot of that at Worker Justice Wisconsin. Well, fortunately, we recover it. We help the workers recover it, but. We celebrate Labor Day during what has been a difficult time for workers, but it is also a hopeful time when we have seen more workers come together for collective actions, and when the public conversation for living wages has gained some traction. Labor in the pulpits on the Bima and the Minbar gives us the opportunity to commit ourselves anew as people of faith who uphold the dignity of every person, to improving jobs so that workers have wages, benefits, and work hours that allow all of us to be self-sufficient and live lives of wholeness. In preparation for this program, I read the Venerable Seven Ross's discourse on wage theft, where he quotes Yasutani Roshi, a well-known Japanese Zen master, as saying, "The fundamental problem for all humanity is that you believe you are there and I am here. We believe we are separate, and as such we feel scarcity and inflict abuses on each other without realizing that we are in this together. By abusing the other or even ignoring the plight of the other, we are in fact hurting ourselves." Roshi's statement reminds me of the spiritual teacher Cynthia Bergeau, who explains that many people repeat the words, "love your neighbor as yourself." But she says that for as much as we repeat those words, people rarely hear them correctly. In fact, she says we hear them wrong. She writes, "We hear, love your neighbor as yourself. If you listen closely to Jesus' teaching, however, there is no as much as in there. It's just love your neighbor as yourself, as a continuation of your own being. It's a complete seeing that your neighbor is you. There are not two individuals out there, one seeking to better herself at the price of the other, or to extend charity to the other. There are simply two cells of the one great life." The second century Jewish sage, Rabbi Akiba, is quoted as saying something very similar. "Love your neighbor as yourself. This is a general principle of the Torah." Coming from three religious traditions, Buddhist, Christian, and Jewish, the message is clear. We are a part of the same organic whole. And as such, when one of us hurts, we all hurt. And when one of us thrives, we all thrive. Interestingly, it was this sense of interconnectivity that led me to study liberation theology, to teach religious studies for 10 years, and now to lead Worker Justice Wisconsin. I feel a connection to every worker in our community in my bones, especially when some of us are threatened or are treated as expendable, perhaps because of our immigration status, or our race, or our gender. When one of us doesn't get paid for our hard work at the restaurant, or at the construction site, or cleaning someone's house, which I've seen a lot this past year, it hurts. And when workers learn about their rights, come together to develop fair working conditions, for example, in the worker cleaning cooperative that was recently incubated at our center, I can feel a sense of thriving arise in our community. This right here is pictures of that co-op as it was forming. By the time they moved to the MCDC, which is a Madison cooperative development organization, there was 14 workers that had come together to be their own bosses. So it's a really powerful model. I want to invite you all, who clearly uphold the dignity of human beings and all of creation in so many ways, to do yet one more thing and join our workers as they collectively stand up for justice. Worker Justice Wisconsin has existed, though under different names, for around 20 years. And for most of this time, we have been primarily a service organization. That is, when workers come to the center, we open an individual case and help them file the appropriate government documents and or refer them to a lawyer. But we are making a conscious shift toward collective organizing now, collective worker organizing. Why? Because it has become utterly apparent, particularly during the pandemic, when existing problems were exacerbated, that when workers deal with workplace grievances individually, they have very little power. Even if they succeed in their individual discrimination case or in recovering stolen wages, the process can take a long time and it does not stop the problem from happening again. But when workers come together and act collectively, we have the power to hold employers accountable and even change public policies. Simply put, we have more courage when we act together. Moreover, the more workers join in, the more likely the employer will have to listen and the less likely they will be able to retaliate. Even more to the point, I would say that when we act together, we are more truly embodying our interconnectivity. This is an image that you see a lot in labor. I'm sure many of you are familiar with it, but it's one that our workers are not always familiar with because our workers are used to many of them operating as invisible and feeling that they have very little power. So we have done a lot and we continue to do a lot to educate them to say, when you stand together, you do have power. And there's this great quote that we found that we're using these days. If you give me a fish, you have fed me for a day. If you teach me to fish, you have fed me until the river is contaminated or the shoreline seeds for development. But if you teach me to organize, then whatever the challenge, I can join together with my peers and we will fashion our own solution. And now I speak to you as people of faith. You have a vital role to play as workers come together in our communities and request things like living wages, adequate health care, and safe working conditions. This is especially true if workers are used to functioning, as I said, as invisibles due to their immigration status, for example. If you can sign their petitions or even stand shoulder to shoulder with workers when they collectively organize in a workplace, you help lend moral legitimacy to their campaigns. Workers need the presence of faith leaders to say, when their boss steals from them or discriminates from them, that this is unjust. Through your vocal and public support of worker-led actions, you help workers gain the courage needed to stand up to far more powerful employers who do not understand, and we can hope that through the process become capable of understanding that we're in this together. And believe it or not, by your participation, you make it much more difficult for an employer to retaliate. No one wants to be a bad guy in public. So I invite you to stand together with workers, and if you are so compelled, to have your faith community sign Worker Justice Wisconsin's Faith and Labor Statement. The statement reads as follows. As people of faith, we uphold the sacred and intrinsic dignity of every person. We believe that work should be a vehicle for discovering a sense of purpose and fulfillment, but that too often it is a means for abuse. We recognize that in today's climate, individual workers are at the mercy of more powerful employers. And we commit to joining forces with workers when they collectively summon the courage to demand fair and just working conditions. Finally, drawing from our sacred traditions, we stand together as communities of faith to advocate for a just and living wage for all, paid sick and family leave, workplaces free from all forms of discrimination and harassment, opportunities for collective organizing without fear of retaliation, and a healthy work-life balance for all people, regardless of race, gender, national origin, immigration status, or creed. So that just leaves me to say thank you for having me here today. I really appreciate this conversation, and I look forward now to talking. So BEMA is, so this, in an effort to be inclusive, this title, by the way, is a national title. It was decided by the Interfaith Worker Justice Group. And so pulpit is usually what Christians call this. The BEMA is what the Jewish congregations call this, and the Minbar Muslim communities call this. By that I mean whatever you call this, right? Yeah. You could call it the mound, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So, if we were truly inclusive, this title would go on for a long time, right? So, you know, eventually, the title may change. It's a national decision. But yeah, we were contacted by a Quaker community this week saying, we don't have any of those. So yes, I mean, you're right. We could put so many more, you know, absolutely. It depends when you're talking about. So when things were shutting down, the biggest problem was job loss, you know, and it was from one day to the other. You know, hotels shut down. So you have 100 workers coming saying we're out of a job. Now, the other problem that people came to us with, and our ability to assist them with this was limited, is that many of the people that we were assisting did not qualify for unemployment. As you know, people who did qualify for unemployment, it was very difficult anyway, because there was a huge backlog. So we did assist them with that a little bit. But the problem with many of them is they never qualified for any sort of assistance. And so for us, it was, you know, scouring to find out where they could get a little bit from here and a little bit from there just to survive. Another thing that we faced early on was a lot of wage theft. You know, hotels shut down overnight or restaurants shut down overnight and don't give people their last paycheck. Now, $300 for a person who's barely surviving is a lot of money, right? So we dealt with a lot of these small cases. Usually we can resolve them fairly quickly by writing what we call a love letter to the boss, saying, you know, we like working for you and it's been good, but please pay us the money. And when are you going to pay it? And that usually works. If that doesn't work, then we have to take more, we have to escalate from there. So we got a lot of those monies back. As time went on, health and safety, lack of PPE became the biggest issue. A lot of places where people, restaurants, for example, where one person would get sick, they were so short-staffed that they would tell them to come in anyway, and then more people would get sick. And then because they weren't showing up to work, they were fired. We dealt with a lot of that. And then in the long haul now, it has just been about just making sure people are in healthy environments, honestly. So it sort of plateaued. We had the spring, the summer was insane, the fall was crazy, and then in the winter it sort of plateaued, and it's sort of been steady since then of wage theft discrimination. We have a lot of partner organizations in the community, so they hear about us through partner organizations. We flyer some, and it's people like you, honestly. You see somebody in a situation and you refer them to us. A lot of it for us, because we are small, is word of mouth. When I speak, I often talk about the employer because, in a sense, it's more immediate, right? Being able to, for workers to be able to have a say in their place of employment is huge. So the thing that we really are trying to do is give voice employees a voice in their workplaces. Because I've heard this said now more than once, and I think there's truth to it. If an employee can have a conversation with the employer and the employer respect that employee, then that employee, that worker, will have the courage to do anything. You know, ultimately, our goal is policy change. And it's a real uphill battle. Like you said, it's not just in healthcare, but even paid sick leave. I mean, there's so many obstacles because of the way that the is structured, the society is structured, right? The ultimate goal is to be able to change those policies. But people find their courage first and foremost in their places of work. And it's not always combative. Sometimes it's a working conversation with a boss. That's always our first step, you know? So if there can be a good working relationship with the boss, then there's a possibility to move on and do some more deeper systemic change of the kind that you're speaking of correctly. Yeah, in my assessment. Yes, so out of Worker Justice Wisconsin, there have been a few others that have been formed. There's an interpreters co-op that came out several years ago. There's a restaurant co-op that is now about to open. They're getting close to opening a restaurant. Coming up now, we have a painters co-op starting to organize and a landscaping co-op starting to organize. So hopefully within the next year or so, those will be coming up. In terms of how they're known, you know, it's some of the traditional business practices. You know, if they have a good model, MCDC, this Madison, I always forget, Coalition Development MCDC, gives them a $10,000 grant or grants them, and that gives them the starting monies to incorporate and to make themselves initially known. Otherwise, we also pass the word. MCDC passes the word around. Unions pass the word around. I've been in conversation with a mayor of Madison, and she's really keen on cooperatives. And so she likes to know if something is coming up. Not that she can favor them, but it's just something that, you know, certain local politicians like to know if it's coming up and at least try to include them in some bids. So, you know, that sort of thing. It's a lot of word of mouth, to be honest, at the beginning. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rebecca, for that very interesting talk and the work that you're doing in our community. And please stay in touch and let us know how our folks can support you.